Peanut butter jelly time. Peanut butter jelly. Contrary to popular belief, I'm actually not a fan of peanut butter jelly. Even when I lived in the States, I'm like, I can't wrap my head around this combination. That being said, I'm also very aware that it's a good combination for people. And speaking of good combinations, if you've been a long-term listener to this podcast, you know I'm a big fan of testing things. So getting data based on figuring out what's going to work best for you so you can design your nutritional plan or supplement plan based on your kind of individual needs. And I'm a huge fan of gut health and looking after your gut health. So today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by the gut health test company Thrive, T-H-R-Y-V-E. I've talked on this podcast numerous times about the importance of gut health, and I found a company that helps take the guesswork out of improving your digestive health. If you've been struggling with any of the following health issues, you might be surprised to learn your gut could be the culprit. Trouble focusing, maintaining a positive mood or energy, bloating, constipation or abdominal pain, food intolerances, or feeling abnormally tired after eating, or even maintaining a healthy weight. Your gut communicates with your brain through nerves and hormones, and when gut health is poor, it can directly contribute to these types of health concerns. Thankfully, we can fix a lot of these issues with a better diet and the right probiotics, which I've talked about on previous podcasts. Thrive makes this process really simple by offering an affordable at-home gut health test so you can know the state of your gut health and what problems it may be causing. They ship the test kit to your house in a discreet package, and once you take the test, you'll submit your results to Thrive with a prepaid shipping label. Thrive will analyze your sample in their accredited laboratory, and their team will analyze your results to develop custom probiotics just for you to help treat these problems. These aren't the one-size-fits-all probiotics that can potentially work great for some. This is next-level stuff, and is completely personalized to you based on the results of the test. It's an awesome service, and it's available worldwide, and it only costs $99. If you want to take your gut health seriously, visit trythrive.com/Brian Keane. That's TryThrive, TRYVE/Brian Keane, and join thousands of people who have taken charge of their digestive health with the help of Thrive at-home gut health tests. There is a special offer for Brian Keane podcast listeners as well to get 10% off your first month at TryThrive.com/Brian Keane with the code Keane at checkout, K-E-A-N-E. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the books, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, normally here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and wellness in general, or nutrition, or mindset, everything along those lines. But today is a solo episode, and more specifically, a solo Q&A. So this has been widely requested because the last one I did was, I think, in February, episode 265, which talked about tracking body fat, carbs post-workout, my average day, personal growth books, and living below your means. So I will link that in the show notes for anyone that wants to check out, who enjoys today's episode and wants to go down a similar route with more Q&As. So today's episode, I'm going to pull the questions from a little bit of all over. Some from my Instagram story Q&A. I do a weekly story Q&A every Thursday, 10 question Q&A. And some from DMs that have came in. But there's a wide range of questions today. So from nutrition to training to my personal life to mindset. So I'm going to jump in and out. And I've tried to segregate them a little bit so that it starts kind of health, fitness. And then we're going to go more towards the mindset towards the end of the episode. So if you like that format, but again, it's time stamped as well. So if you check the description, you can literally jump straight into your favorite question. And if you listen to this, I'm not sure how many of you listen to this on the website, BrianKeaneFitness.com, but the timestamps automatically jump to the question. So it saves you having to do it manually through Spotify or iTunes or wherever it is that you listen. So we'll jump straight in with today's first question. Question one, will eating late at night make me fat, or is this just a myth? It's a little bit of a tricky question to answer because the long and the short of it is obviously with most things that come down to nutrition and diet, is the answer is it depends. For the most part, it's a myth, but generally not why you think it is. What happens with a lot of people, now there's definitely some hormonal response to insulin and eating later at night. So I'm not going to completely cut the cord on that because there are some scientific and definitely some evidence to suggest that eating late at night can potentially have an effect on insulin levels, which can potentially lead to fat storage. But in most cases, it tends to be a massive myth. And what happens is when you're, in order to lose fat, in order to reduce your weight, and not confusing the two things, losing weight is reducing numbers on a scale, losing body fat is reducing the amount of fat in your body. So when it comes to eating late at night, there's a couple of disadvantages that that has. If you're eating too many calories, that leads to fat gain. And in order to lose body fat or in order to reduce body fat, you need to be in a caloric deficit. There's very little things that you need to do for fat loss. It's actually a very straightforward process. Not super easy in application because you still have to do it, but it's actually a very straightforward process. Things like muscle building, increasing speed, other compositional goals or even athletic and performance-based goals, they're a lot more difficult. There's a lot more moving parts to those things. But fat loss, there isn't. Fat loss really comes down to calories in, calories out. Now, the process and how you do it is going to determine how easy you find it and how you feel. So things like your food choices, dietary restrictions that you may be including or not including, systems you may be incorporating, things like intermittent fasting, keto, whatever it is. All these things will make you feel a lot different. But at the end of the day, it's a caloric deficit or a calorie deficit that's going to help you lose fat. So it doesn't really matter what you do to get there, whether you do a keto diet, whether you do Slimming World, whether you do Weight Watchers, whether you do clean eating, whether you do a vegan diet, whether you do a carnivore diet. It really doesn't matter. If you're in a calorie deficit, you will lose fat. As I said, you'll feel very different and body composition won't be the same. You put two people on the same diet, you're going to have two people on a different diet, both in a deficit, one doing it with a vegan or plant-based or paleo diet and somebody else doing it with McDonald's and, you know, different sugary foods. They're both potentially going to lose body fat if they're in a deficit, but they'll look completely different. One is obviously going to feel significantly better. They're going to have more nutrient density in their food, so their energy levels are going to be higher. Also, their body composition is probably going to be better. Their digestion will be better. Their sleep will be better. All the intangibles of fat loss, whereas somebody doing it with, say, fast food and McDonald's, although if you put them into a DEXA scanner, they'll have reduced body fat, they're not going to look like they won't look as good and they definitely won't feel as good. So how you do it matters. How you lose body fat does matter. And I never want to get, I've talked about this in the podcast in the past and I mentioned this on Instagram a couple of weeks ago about, I never want to get pigeonholed into a calories in, calories out coach, because as important as it is, context matters. And if you're looking to lose body fat, there is a pyramid of prioritization. There is a single one thing you need to do to lose fat, and that's getting into a calorie deficit. So when it comes to eating late at night, same thing when it comes to skipping breakfast or having breakfast or intermittent fasting. If you're in an overall calorie deficit, you'll lose body fat. It doesn't matter whether you do that with one meal a day. It doesn't matter if you do that with 6 meals a day. It doesn't matter if you do that with 15 meals a day. If you're in a calorie deficit, you're going to lose body fat. But what happens with eating late at night, if you think about it logically, it's very, very similar to the misconception around intermittent fasting, where people are like, if you skip breakfast, you'll lose fat. And as I said, I did touch on a little bit of the insulin response and the hormonal response, and there is a fat adaptation principle to making your body more fat adapted when you go into fasted states. But for the majority of people who are just looking to lose body fat and look better, it's a case of skipping one entire meal, i.e. your breakfast for intermittent fasting, normally means you're eating less calories. And eating less calories, if it's putting you into a deficit, means you'll lose fat. So it's not the skipping of a meal that's necessarily helping you with your fat loss. It's the fact that you've reduced your overall calorie intake because you've removed an entire meal. And eating late at night can be very, very similar. It's nearly the reverse of this. If you stop eating late at night, you're going to have a lower intake of calories. And if you have a lower intake of calories, which is increasing your chance of getting into a deficit, you're going to lose fat. If you reverse that, eating more calories, whether it's in the morning or whether it's late at night in this case, is leading you into a calorie surplus, it's more likely to make you fat. So there's that standpoint on the calories in, calories out. There's also the impact of food choices. Now, I can't speak for anybody else, but I know for a fact I'm not craving fucking broccoli and spinach at 10 o'clock at night. I'm like, I'm going to have some cake or I'm going to have some ice cream while I'm watching something on TV. So your food choices play a role here too. And as you're eating later at night, one of my habits that I incorporated about 2 years ago, about January 2018, so nearly 3 years ago at this stage, I started doing time-restricted eating. So I try and eat all of my meals in an 8 to 10 hour window. And part of that was down to trying to make myself more fat-adapted for endurance events. And it was partly down to trying to improve my sleep quality, because people fall on two ends of the spectrum when it comes to sleep and eating before bed. Some people going to bed in a semi-fasted state, i.e. they haven't eaten 2, 3, 4, 5 hours before bed, will sleep significantly better. Other people will need to eat right before bed in order to drop into a deep sleep. So it's about finding where you fall on that spectrum. I spoke about it in my first book, The Fitness Mindset, a little bit about finding where you fall. If you experiment with having a little bit of food before bed, some carbohydrates and protein, or some fat and protein, and that's making you have a really deep and good night quality sleep, I'm like, well, you should probably eat more before bed. I'm like, that's really useful. But I actually fall on the other end of that spectrum completely. So the more fasted I am and the less food that's in my stomach, the higher quality my sleep tends to be. So as a result of that, I ended up finding I was getting significantly leaner, because my overall calorie intake came down, particularly for those first 6 months, just because I was eating in a more time-restricted window. It was a totally unintended consequence of implementing time-restricted eating into my dietary or into my nutritional plan. So context really matters here. So when it comes to eating late at night, will it make you fat? I was talking to Paul Dermody about this. We didn't get into it too much on the podcast, but he had a really good post on his Instagram page that he talked about. If you go up to the ATM, he was like, yeah, you know, if you go up to your ATM, all the money after 6 p.m. is free. And you're like, no, it's not. That's silly. That's stupid. And it's like, yeah, exactly. Like, eating carbs or eating food after a certain time doesn't mean that it makes you fat or makes you skinny or makes you lean. The context has to be applied. So will eating late at night make you fat? If it's putting you into a calorie surplus, yeah, definitely it will. But that goes for eating at any time during the day or eating any amount of calories, regardless of what time of the day you eat it. The same as if eating late at night is keeping you in a deficit, it's not going to make you put on fat. Again, there are other things that I touched on that are worth considering, like your ability to sleep based on if you eat late at night. Sometimes if people have food sitting in their stomach, they can't sleep. And as a result of that, they get poor quality sleep. They're not dropping into deep REM cycles, so getting the rapid eye movement sleep. So they're waking up the next day feeling fatigued, which normally leads to you reaching to either a higher calorie intake foods, sugary foods, caffeinated drinks, etc. And it can have this negative spiral and negative feedback loop, because you ate too close to bed, had a poor night's sleep, and as a result you made poor food choices the next day, which led you into a surplus. So there's a lot of things to consider, but as a general rule of thumb, eating late at night won't make you fat. For the majority of people, it's just a myth. As long as you're keeping everything in a calorie control plan, you're not going to put on fat by eating a meal late at night. Okay, question two. Best training program for weight loss. Right, I'm going to reframe this question slightly, because I'm going to change it to fat loss. The question that came in was best training program for weight loss. So I've talked on this podcast in the past, weight loss is reducing numbers on a scale. Fat loss is reducing the amount of fat in your body. In order to lose weight, all you have to effectively do is either reduce or massively restrict the amount of carbohydrates you eat, so that you're pulling less water underneath the muscle, you're pulling less water into your body in general, and you'll step on a scale and you'll weigh considerably lighter. That's why fighters, bodybuilders, bikini girls, people who have to make weight for a competition will cut their carbohydrate generally, and they'll normally load their water and then increase their water after, load their water and then cut their water closer to a weigh-in, so that they can step on a scale and weigh less so that they can make the weight for their fight. That's not a reduction in body fat, that's a reduction in weight. That's lowering numbers on a scale. So when it comes to a training program for weight loss, I'm not going to touch on that, because that comes down to glycogen depletion workouts. So normally high volume workouts, compound lifts mixed in with isolations, that you can completely deplete your muscle of glycogen, so that when you step on a scale you're going to weigh less. That's a very short term metric, i.e. a day or two, but it's not a reduction in body fat. Whereas when it comes to best training program for fat loss, it's a different question, because you're talking long term, you're talking sustainable, you're talking an actual reduction in fat, as opposed to just moving numbers on a scale downwards for a day or two so that, you know, you can feel better, so you see a number coming back at you. So best training program for fat loss. This is also a little bit of a tricky one, because the reality is, to lose fat, as I said, and the reason I paired this question or put this question back to back with will eating late at night make me fat, is because you don't actually have to work out or train to lose body fat. And I think that's contrary to popular belief with some people. It's like you don't. It's like it massively helps. Cardio, resistance training, all of these things can help and support a calorie deficit, but you actually don't need to do any of them. And one of the misconceptions people can hold is they think that, right, I need to really dial in my training program in order to lose body fat. I'm like, you don't though. I'm like, you don't necessarily have to prioritize training in order to lose fat. You do need to prioritize your nutrition though. And all training does is it supports that calorie deficit. So there's another misconception out there that people are like, oh, cardio burns fat. I'm like, cardio doesn't burn fat. I'm like, cardio burns calories. And as a result, the more calories you burn can help you burn fat if it's putting you into a deficit. So that's the advantage. Like resistance training, weight training, and cardio kind of work in different ways. So resistance training has what's called like a metabolic effect on your body. So when you lift weights, when you do resistance training, you tear down fibers, you're tearing down microfibers. And as a result, when you go and eat your post-workout meal or you're trying to eat your meals for the next few days, your body's prioritizing some of those calories, particularly the amino acids and the protein you're eating, in order to repair from those workouts. So what that can have is it gives you kind of a thermogenic switch where your metabolism is elevated for the 24 to 72 hours after a resistance training workout. So what people can get confused with is when they jump onto a cardio machine, a treadmill, a cross trainer, a bike, and they burnt, you know, X amount of calories. Now, they're also not super accurate, but let's say for this argument, they are. People were like, oh, I'm wearing a Fitbit, I'm wearing a Garmin, I've tracked my calories. I only burnt 200 calories during my weight workout, but I burnt 500 calories on the treadmill. So people make the conclusion that, well, obviously the treadmill's significantly better for losing body fat. And to a degree it is, but they work in different ways. But what resistance training does is it elevates your metabolism so that you burn more calories while you rest as your body tries to repair from that workout. What happens with cardio is when you elevate your heart rate, you burn more calories during the actual session, which can support fat loss as well, but you tend to not burn more calories while you're repairing and resting because it's not as damaging to the muscle in general. You don't tear as many fibers doing cardio-based workouts, cross-training, than you would with a resistance-style compound lift program, i.e. squats, military press, deadlifts, etc. So when it comes to the best training program for fat loss, I like a combination of both. I think when you combine the best of both worlds, you get the best of all worlds, but also not to be confused with the fact that you don't actually have to work out to lose body fat. If you're struggling to prioritize training, there's a couple of low-hanging fruits that you can go for and you can target. One of the things that I generally do with people in my BKF online program, the people who are struggling to prioritize their training, and it happens, like people can be midway through, you know, 6-week program, and week 3 they get a new job or something happens where they can't commit to training. And some people will wonder, oh, fuck, press the fucker button and go, well, you know, I'll just jump on it again in a few weeks. But that's not the best approach. And that's generally not what I advise people, because when fat loss is the goal, I'm like, all right, cool. We can prioritize training, but what we can do is focus on your deficit. That's the primary thing that's the most important. And secondly, if we can focus on your NEAT activity, your non-exercise activity thermogenesis, so you're standing more, you're walking more, your 10,000 a day step count. A lot of people listening to this podcast, for you listening, will be familiar with, you know, trying to get a step count in. So 10,000 calories being kind of the recommended amount. You can put those focus, you can make that a major focus and still get tremendous results. When it comes to having more priority and more time where you can prioritize your training, apologies, you're going to find that, yeah, a combination of weight training and cardio is normally going to be the king. So if your goal is body composition, find a training program or design a training program that specifically targets what it is you're trying to improve. So normally full body workouts split over the week. So I like in my programs, my female plan, obviously there's different versions based on the level, but a form of push-pull legs. So you're hitting all those push muscles, you're hitting those pull muscles, you're hitting leg muscles, and then normally I focus on glutes and hamstrings, and then a cardio and abs day. And then the alternative for guys is a push-pull legs, obviously different movements based on the level and based on the priority of the muscle group, and then a chest and ab workout and a cardio ab workout for session 5. So it varies. Or high intensity, which is full body HIIT workouts. So there's lots of versions of that program that it basically depends on what's going to be the best fit for you. Training at home, training with body weight, or training with weight, training in the gym, all right, what level and what program and what muscle priority, what's your main focus and goals. So when it comes to training programs for fat loss, I like combining the best of all worlds. So a resistance training program that is either bodyweight resistance, or ideally, if you're in a gym, you're using weights as resistance and then factoring in cardio. So either a low intensity, steady state cardio, you know, 15, 20 minutes at the end of a workout on a treadmill or a cross trainer, or preferably I like a time saving HIIT workout. So Tabata workouts, 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off, 8 rounds, which are like 4 minute workouts, or 30-30 splits, which I talk about in the Fitness Mindset book, the first book, that if you're on a bike, 30 second sprint on a bike, 30 second recovery, and doing that repeated 10 times. So 30 second high intensity sprints for 10 rounds. They can all work tremendously well. But if you're someone, as I said, that struggles with priority or struggles with prioritizing training right now, for whatever reason, family commitments, work commitments, etc., just focus on your step count and focus on your nutrition, because that's the most important thing when it comes to fat loss. But if you're asking what's the best training program, normally a combination of a high intensity, or normally a combination of resistance training with some form of cardio, either high intensity or low intensity. But if you can't prioritize that, focus on your step count, focus on your neat activity, standing more, etc., and that will all help with your fat loss, provided that your nutrition is aligned with the goal of being in a calorie deficit to make sure that you're able to use fat for fuel and get your fat levels reduced. Question 3, are you a fan of supplementing with vitamins and minerals, thinking of getting some vitamin D and maybe some B12? When it comes to supplementation, and I put all supplements into this bracket, vitamins and minerals as well as performance or recovery based supplements, I think the supplements that you don't need are an absolute waste of money. And I think the supplements that you do need are probably the best investment you can make. So I'm going to unpack that a little bit, because that might sound a little bit confusing on the front end. And what I mean by supplements that you don't need are supplements that are an absolute waste of time. So for example, when I think of branched chain amino acids, they're a great supplement example. I'm a massive fan of branched chain amino acids for people in a calorie deficit or for people who train fasted. I think they're an amazing tool in your arsenal, and based on your overall nutritional plan, they can be very, very effective, especially if you're trying to keep your calorie intake lower, but you want some good quality essential amino acids. BCAAs tend to be the really, really good ones there. But if you're in a massive calorie surplus to bulk up and add size, and you're hitting your protein requirements and more with food, BCAAs can be the biggest waste of money. Yeah, they can taste really good and they're a nice thing to sip on during your workout, but in terms of actual practical performance or improvement, they tend to be a waste of money. And all supplements fall into that bracket. If you're taking a supplement that you don't need, it's a waste of money. If you're taking a supplement that your body needs, it's an incredible investment, because you're going to hedge your bets against what it is that you're not getting. So for example, vitamin D. Vitamin D, normally, for a lot of people in the Western world, particularly Ireland and England, I know a lot of you are all over the world listening to this podcast. For those of you in Ireland and England, particularly now coming into the winter months, October, November, December, January, where there's less daylight, there's less sunlight, we tend to be, and the majority of people tend to be, vitamin D deficient. So one of the things that I did recently, I put this on my Instagram, it's in my Instagram highlights at the minute, is my vitamin D test. So I use Let's Get Checked, who I've mentioned on this podcast in the past. I have an affiliate code set up with Let's Get Checked as well. That they are the company that do all my blood work. So I'll put that affiliate link in the description for today's episode as well. It gives you 30% off your first time order. It's Keane 30, K-E-A-N-E 30 for anyone that wants it. But my vitamin D, I sent that off, I'm actually sending it off this week. So the results will hopefully be in my highlights as well by the time this episode goes live in the next week. And my vitamin D levels. So what I do is I get the test for the vitamin D. It's a kind of a pin prick. You put the blood into, you prick your thumb or you prick your finger, you put the blood into the sample, then you send it off and they come back to you privately with your vitamin D levels. And then based on that, I normally interpret the data and I will design my supplement regimen based on what comes back. So if my levels were low, so for example, in my last vitamin D test, which was 8 months ago, 9 months ago, I came back that I was about 40 IUs under. So that was my feedback. I'm like, all right, cool, I'm going to start supplementing back in 40 IUs every day and see how my body feels. And that's the beauty of it. You tend to not notice a vitamin or mineral deficiency when you tend to not notice when you are at the required amount of vitamin or mineral deficiency. It's normally when you're deficient, you tend to feel the negative effects. So for me, vitamin D, obviously it's an amazing supporter of immune system, of testosterone for men. So I'm very fortunate with a strong immune system, healthy sex drive, healthy hormone levels. Everything seems to be taking over very, very well. So when this new test comes back, it's unlikely that I'm going to be deficient because I bumped up the to 40 I used based on the last test. So you're using that, and that's an example of how I've used it as a way to see, right, where are my levels at? Do I need to increase it? Vitamin B12, very, very similar. The problem with vitamin B12, and I spoke about this in the first book, The Fitness Mindset, in the context for vegans, is vitamin B12 is a little bit of a tricky one. It's one that I quite like testing for because you don't tend to get any of the negative effects until the long term. Something like vitamin D deficiency, you'll feel the effects. You'll be getting sick all the time. Your sex drive will be really low. You'll just have a general feeling of not being very well. But vitamin B12 is a tricky one because you don't actually feel the negative effects of it because of the buildup in the system and how long it takes to have any negative effect. So getting on the front end of that can be useful and seeing if you're deficient. Most vegans tend to supplement or should definitely consider supplement with a vitamin B12 supplement because they're not going to get it from nutrition. It's normally in red meat, different meats. So you tend to be deficient if you're vegan. So it's one of those supplements that's nearly a staple for most vegans. So when it comes to supplementing with vitamins and minerals in general, it really depends. Like you can get a gauge based on your own level of knowledge and nutrition on what you may be deficient in. So for example, as a nutritionist, I know that if I'm not eating red meat or if I'm not eating pumpkin seeds, there's a very good chance I'm going to be deficient in zinc because I'm not getting it into my nutrition. I'm not eating the foods that have that mineral. So I know that I need to supplement it back in. But I'm also aware not everybody has the background in nutrition that I have. So I generally don't recommend that approach, even though it can work. Vitamin B12 probably being the exception because it's quite common knowledge that vegans need to supplement it back in. That's where your testing can come in very well. So either going to your GP or using somebody like Let's Get Checked or using an alternative company or whoever it is that you want to use that will check your blood work, that can be a very useful way to see, do you need certain vitamins or do you need certain minerals? The alternative is that you're working with a nutritionist, a dietitian, or a coach who understands nutrition, because you can look at somebody's plan and there's certain very obvious signals. So for example, when I look at somebody's nutritional plan, and the first thing that'll come to me is, oh, I've got really bad chocolate cravings. And I look at their nutrition. I'm like, okay, if they're not eating a lot of plants, you know, they're not eating a lot of dark chocolate, I'm like, there's a good chance they're going to be magnesium deficient. So without ever sending them for a blood test, you can experiment with some magnesium and see if those negative effects, i.e. cravings, go away. And if they do, in 9 out of 10 cases, in my experience, they have. People are like, oh no, I feel fine. The cravings are gone. I'm like, okay, it was a magnesium deficiency. So there's a few different ways to approach it. Obviously, the more scientific way is to get the test and then based on the data, make your decision, get either figure out how to interpret that data yourself or get a coach or a trainer to interpret it. Or if you are want to do a trial and error approach, you can also do that. When it comes to being a fan of supplementing, as I said, for those that need it, I think it's an amazing hedge. It's very, very difficult to get everything you need from nutrition in this day and age just because of the different things that are worth considering. Next week's podcast, we're talking to Wade Lightheart, who speaks about gut health and optimizing your digestion and some of the things to look out for when it comes to buying your foods because of the lack of nutrients in some of the modern food technologies. So that's in more detail in next week's episode. But for now, when it comes to supplementing, if you think you need, or if you want to get tested, or if you want to work with a coach or a trainer who can identify what you may be deficient in, that would be the approach I would take. I wouldn't use a supplement just because you've been told to, because I've said to use it or somebody else has said to use it. That's generally not great advice, particularly on something like a podcast or even in a book. As someone that writes books and records podcasts, the context matters because everyone's individual needs are different. So always take what you hear on a podcast or in a book when it's a one size fits all as a grain of salt and see if it's something that applies to you, because you as an individual are going to have different requirements from me, from somebody else, and from another third person. So always keep that in mind, even just as a heads up when you're listening to the podcast and listening to different audiobooks or reading books. It's always worth considering that the context really does matter when it comes to vitamins, minerals, and supplementation. Okay, question 4. How do I become more patient with my weight loss? Oh, if I had a euro for every time I've told somebody that they need to be patient with weight loss, I'd have lots of euros. But I will add a couple of actual practical tips here, because I'm going to switch it again, similar to earlier. I'm going to switch it to fat loss. The question came in as weight loss. As I said, there's a difference between weight loss and fat loss. When it comes to becoming more patient with fat loss, there's a few things to consider. And that, number one, is, are you progressing everywhere? So when it comes to fat loss, it's a little bit of a tricky one, because what happens with people, myself included, not so much now because body composition isn't my goal, but back when it was, is we tend to have a little bit of a negativity bias, meaning that there's a part of our body that we're not necessarily happy with. Our, you know, a stubborn body fat around our stomach or around our lower back or around our bum or around wherever it is. And that's the part that we keep looking at. So the example I use is, every once in a while I'll have somebody come through my program who will message me week three, week four, and they're like, oh, look, my body isn't responding at all. I'm not happy. My fat isn't dropping at all. And I'll look at their pictures and it will be noticeably reduced everywhere except in one area. And normally my follow-up question will be, okay, where's the area you're focusing on? They're like, look at my stomach. I was like, it hasn't reduced at all. I'm like, okay, take a step back. And I'll show them the reduction in their lower back, and I'll show them the reduction of body fat in their glutes, and I'll show them the reduction of body fat in their arms. And then I'll explain how body fat works. Stubborn body fat, by its nature, there's different types, the two different types of body fat I've covered in the podcast before. So visceral fat, subcutaneous fat. So subcutaneous fat, the fat that you can pull, visceral fat is the fat over your vital organs. But when it comes to reducing that subcutaneous fat, the fat that you can actually pull at, what tends to happen is body fat doesn't reduce in the part you want it to reduce in. Body fat doesn't spot reduce. There's no exercise. There's no movement. There's no food that you can use that's going to take body fat from your stomach. So you can't do that. It's not how fat loss works. Fat loss works as an overall reduction, meaning that you tend to lose body fat off your fastest moving areas first. So for example, I'll use my own body as context just because it's probably a decent example for this. When I used to prepare for photo shoots, or when I used to prepare for bodybuilding shows, I always had a reduction in body fat in certain areas faster than others. So as soon as I got into a deficit, my arms got leaner. As soon as I dropped into a deficit, my shoulders got leaner. And then after a couple of weeks, my legs would get leaner. And then after a couple of more weeks, my abs would get leaner. And then right before I would step on stage or do a show, my lower back fat, my body fat around my back would reduce. So that was my last area. And it was always only for a week or two, like to the point where I had very low body fat around my lower back. It was only ever the week or two before shoots or shows, because that's just where my body holds it. And everyone has a version of that. You're not going to lose body fat from a specific area in one go. So when it comes to becoming more patient, you have to ask yourself the question, are you reducing body fat everywhere else and you're just not losing it from that stubborn area? If that's the answer, then patience is the key. It's very much a, right, what are you focusing on? What you focus on is what expands. What are you focusing on? If you're focusing on your progress everywhere else, if you're focusing on other intangibles of fat loss, i.e. Improved energy levels, improved sleep, increased sex drive, increased fitness, all the other potential intangibles or tangibles of fat loss, and you're focusing on those, it's only a matter of time before you step or start to tap into those stubborn fat stores as well. But contrary to that, if you're not progressing everywhere, you have direct feedback that what you're doing isn't working. So when it comes to being patient, I'm all about being patient with fat loss when you're progressing. But there's no point being patient if you're not progressing and just necessarily trusting the process. If you're doing something for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, and nothing is moving, you're either doing it yourself or you're with a coach or you're with a trainer or you're in an online program or whatever it is, and you're doing everything that is required for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and there's still no change, there's no point being patient with that, because you've got feedback that something isn't working. So you normally have to change a variable. Now, it depends, based on where you're coming from, on what stimulus or variable you're going to change. So for example, if you're coming from a low calorie plan into an online program or into working with a one-to-one personal trainer or even doing up your own program, it's very, very difficult to go from a 1600 calorie plan to a 1500 or 1400 calorie plan, regardless of your starting point, because you were already quite low on calories to begin with, which normally means that you need to get a change or a stimulus change from something else, i.e. your training or your recovery, where you're sleeping better and getting all these other benefits of increased recovery from sleep. You need to put a focus elsewhere. On the other flip side of that, if you're coming from having never made any conscious choices around food, just getting into a basic deficit, so say your maintenance is 2,000 calories and you start eating 1,900 calories, you're probably going to get a massive shift in response from that alone, even before you've incorporated any training, because that dietary shift has now put you into a deficit and everything starts moving. So fat loss starts to progress and you start to progress in a very positive way. So keep that in mind as well, that you have feedback. It's going to be one of the two. If you're struggling with patients for fat loss on a fat loss journey right now, and you're progressing, and you've either found something that's sustainable for you, ideally, you know, I spoke in the fitness mindset about find when you can make your nutrition automatic, where you just make the right automatic food choice. I'm like, that's a very valuable approach to take when it comes to nutrition, where you're not really thinking about, you know, I'm not on a diet. It's the diet mindset versus the nutrition mindset. The diet mindset is I follow this, you know, X amount of food or this type of diet until I hit Y goal. Whereas the nutrition mindset is, you know, this is just the way I eat and I slightly adjust my calories or my macros based on if I've changed my goal or not. So there's a big difference there in terms of the mindset. But you'll either be falling on the side of you are progressing, and if you're able to stick to it and you're on a sustainable plan, you're enjoying the process, my advice is to keep going and to focus on the positives of the things that are moving, either the body fat levels that are reducing or the other intangibles that I mentioned earlier. On the flip side, if you're not responding, there's no point being patient, because you've got exact feedback, direct feedback, that what you're doing isn't working. So you either need to further reduce calories, you need to change up your training, you need to put a focus elsewhere in order to get things moving again. And the reason I bring that up is patience is a very important tool to acquire, or a very important skill to acquire on a weight loss or fat loss journey, but also don't get complacent with it, because if you're patient and your ladder is up against the right wall where you are losing body fat and everything is moving in the right direction, just probably not as quickly as you want it to, that's a very different scenario from trusting the process, but you're actually getting feedback that nothing is moving, body fat staying the same or worse, going higher. That's feedback, you need to change something. So based on where you're at, make the decision just to make sure that you're able to cultivate that patience so that it does support you when you are actually progressing. Okay, question 5. Brian, what's your next big event? Well, it's a tricky one. It's a tricky one because it's COVID dependent. I had a lot of events scheduled for this year. I had Ironman scheduled for June, and I was supposed to be running in Nepal in November, both of which have been cancelled because of COVID. So it's very, very difficult to say. What I will say is I've signed up to several events in 2021, so a mixture between triathlon, ultramarathons, multi-day endurance events. I've signed up to a few in the knowledge that probably half will get cancelled, but just to give me a little bit of focus with training. I've talked on this podcast previously, I have to sign up for events or I generally won't run in my training, because I don't enjoy the process of running at all. I do it for different reasons. It gives me a lot of mental clarity and it kind of develops that mental toughness of doing something that you don't want to do, even though you know it'll benefit you. But one of my tools for motivating myself to run at the end of workouts is signing up to an event, just because I don't enjoy that process. I will do CrossFit workouts. I will do strength and conditioning workouts. I will do bodybuilding workouts. I love weight training. I love high intensity workouts, but I don't enjoy running. So I have to sign up for events. So I signed up to even the Galway Marathon, which has since been cancelled, back in August, just to give me a little bit of focus. I found that my training was waning. I was really struggling for the motivation to run. So I signed up to the Galway Marathon, knowing that it was probably going to get cancelled with COVID. And then I got the notice about 2 weeks ago that it had been cancelled. So that's one of my tools. It just gets cancelled and got moved on to the next year. But that's just one of my tools for motivation. So when it comes to the next big event, I can't say fully, because it's very, very difficult to know. because of COVID and the restrictions. But what I can say is I'm signed up to several mix between ultramarathon, triathlon, Ironman distance and otherwise, and multi-day endurance events just to keep me focused on training. But again, that's just one of my tools in my arsenal, knowing full well that they may or may not go ahead due to the current environment. Okay, question six, another one about me. So I wanted to pair these two together. Brian, who do you live with? So some of you will be following me on Instagram. It's an interesting question because this came in on my Instagram story. And I kind of, this is one of these assumptions that you just kind of assume that everybody knows. I live by myself. Well, I live with my daughter. Mahali's with me half the time. And it's just me and her. So I live quite close to where I grew up. One of the changes I made in 2018, I touched on this in the podcast, a recent podcast with Paul Dermody, that when I'm feeling very isolated or if I'm not feeling very good in my own mental health, I normally do the kind of what, why, when, where question. And that's what I did when it came to figuring out where it was that I needed to start putting down roots or where I should be living right now. So when it comes to that what, why, when, where, normally it was quite straightforward for me. So in 2018, in terms of what I was doing, even in 2018, I love what I do. I still love what I do. Like, I absolutely love my job. Everything I do, the podcast, the speaking, the courses, I absolutely love what I do. So that wasn't an issue. Why I was doing it, I was very clear. I've spoke about this in both my books, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, about having your why, knowing why you're doing things to keep you motivated, to keep you driven, to keep your desire high. And when it came to where I was, I'm like, that was the thing that I wasn't quite certain on. At the time, I was living in Galway City. So I was living in the city and had previously lived in London and lived in California before that. And I never really fully felt at home in either of those cities. In London, I loved it for a couple of years when I was teaching, but I never felt at home in it. It's a very weird environment for me at the time. And I'll speak about this in a question that comes on later. And the reason I put this question in here is because it kind of will leave a nice little seed for a question later. Like, I felt really lonely in London. And it's weird because there's 12 million people, I think, in London and Greater London. And I never felt more alone in my life than when I was living there. And I knew when I moved back in 2014, I'm like, well, I just need to get out of this city. I'm like, this is not where I'm supposed to be right now. And then when I moved back into Galway City and was living there for a couple of years and really enjoyed it. But then by 2018, Paul had left. So Paul Dermody, who's been on this podcast, who's one of my best friends, one of my inner circle. Paul had left. He'd moved to Spain, working in his online business in Spain, in Barcelona at the time. And I wasn't enjoying living in a city. I wasn't enjoying living in a big town, whatever you want to call Galway City in the west of Ireland. And I decided I was going to move out closer to where I grew up. So I live in the country. I live about 10 minutes from where I grew up. So my mum and dad's house is about 10 minutes from me. I've got a lot of family, a lot of friends around my local area. But that's where I'm living right now. And I live with myself. I'm in a very fortunate position. Even as I'm recording this podcast, I'm overlooking a beautiful mountain. I live in the middle of a valley. Half the week, it's just me. And then the other half of the week, it's me and Holly. And yeah, it's amazing. I absolutely love where I am. And I think it's a very important thing to ask yourself, are you happy with where you are right now? And it doesn't mean you have to move instantly. But if you're very unclear or very unhappy or unsettled with wherever it is you are right now, whether it's abroad, whether it's at home, wherever it is, it's normally worth checking in with that. Because for me, for the first time in my life in terms of where I'm living, I feel I have it dialed in. I'm like, yeah, this is where I'm supposed to be. I'm like, I absolutely love where I am. And that came down and that seed was planted from being very unsettled and just not feeling right and not being aware of where it was coming from, because I loved what I was doing. I was doing races. I was out of kind of bodybuilding into endurance races. I had really good friends and network around me. I'm like, but I still felt unsettled. I still felt like this isn't where I'm supposed to be. And then when I moved out closer to home, being out in the country, being closer to nature, very easy to switch off from social media, switch off from digital media. I'm very close to my mum in terms of I can walk back to her and I'm near her in about 10 minutes. All those things added up to just an overall life improvement for me. So yeah, that's just kind of an inside look. I'm not sure how helpful that is, but yeah, that's the answer. So that's who I live with. And that's a little bit of an expansion on my reason for why I moved out to the country about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago now at this stage, and I'd never go back. Question seven. So moving in a slightly different direction with this one. Do you think in the current climate, new PTs should move online straight away? So I'm not going to spend too much time on this question just because on my other podcast, the Online Business Podcast, there's, I think, 70 episodes up on there, and it's all to do with personal training, online businesses, social media. So I'll link that in the description in the show notes for those that want to check it out. But just my kind of quick two cents on this one. With the current climate, I think moving online is, it's, I've done a 180 on this, because if you would ask me pre-COVID or even 12 or 18 months ago, I generally advise personal trainers to cut their teeth on the gym floor and then move online, just because it can make you a much better personal trainer if you have that interaction, a one-to-one interaction, and you're used to working with people, you're seeing the common problems, and then when you move online, it makes that whole process considerably easier. But with the current climate, there's no guarantee that things are going to stay or go back to the way they were. They might, but they also may not. And what I would generally advise new personal trainers or anyone that's recently qualified or looking to go down that route is I would definitely consider moving online a lot faster than you would have considered prior. And how you do that then depends on you, whether you want to figure out and work through it yourself, whether you want to work with a mentor or join a mastermind, whether you want to go through a course like my one on how to move your personal training business online. All those options can potentially work. It's about finding what works best for you. But what I will say is, one of the quotes that I live my life by when it comes to my business philosophy, and it's a Wayne Gretzky quote, who's a famous ice skater, like the Michael Jordan of ice skating. And one of his famous quotes is, don't skate to where the puck is, skate to where the puck is going. And when it comes to business, I always think of that. I'm like, where is the puck going? What's the next social media platform? Where is the next place I should be putting most of my attention? What's the next area that I should be focusing for a book that can potentially help and serve more people? What direction is the world moving in terms of, is digital or virtual or course structure going to be the way forward in the health and fitness or business industry? So I've made a couple of those bets already, as you've seen, with my online programs. I moved online in 2015, 5 years ago, and I would never go back. I think that's one of the best decisions I ever made. You can serve more people. You can work with people regardless of where they are geographically. If you're good with time management, it can be a very efficient way or an effective way to serve a multitude of people. And even now with COVID, I was one of the very fortunate people during COVID that we didn't really have any disruption, with the exception of my Rewire Your Mindset seminar, which we since had to cancel and was moving into a course structure anyway. So the Rewire Your Mindset course, it was already moving into a course structure. Cork was going to be the last seminar. With the exception of that, we had no disruption. But I put a lot of that down to the fact that when you focus online, you've obviously lower overheads, the whole financial side, but two, you're able to pivot faster because you can work with people in an online capacity. So whether they're in their homes, whether they're in a gym, regardless of what it is, class structure, one-to-one, you can pivot. Whereas when gyms close and you're stuck in your house, you can't. There's nothing you can do with that. You know, brick and mortar businesses, there's nothing you can do with that. So what I would advise in the current climate is definitely consider moving online faster. If you need to cut your learning curve, as I said, it depends on what stage you're at. If you're at the point where you want to make a success out of it straight away, look into something like my course, How to Move Your Business Online in 30 Days or Less. A very useful course for personal trainers looking to move online. Or another business coach, a mastermind or a one-to-one mentorship with another business coach who you think will serve you better. That will cut your learning curve massively. Or alternatively, if you're happy to be patient and trial and error, not have a lot of money coming in, and you'll make your own mistakes over a 6, 12, 18 month period, by all means, do it that way. You know, learning by your own mistakes. You can do it that way too. I generally don't recommend it, but it's definitely an alternative option. So what I'd say for new personal trainers is, with the current climate, definitely look into moving online sooner than you would have otherwise, just because it allows you to pivot faster if something like, you know, a second lockdown, third lockdown, a long-term pandemic where, you know, there's no sign of vaccine, there's no sign of cure, you can at least pivot your business and potentially do really, really well. Even though there's other areas of the economy or other areas of business that aren't doing so well, you can at least move and kind of adapt to it. You know, it's not the strongest that survive, it's the most adaptable. So keep that in mind when it comes to your business as well. Okay, question 8. Do you ever feel alone or lonely, and what's the best way to handle it? Okay, so I wanted to add this question in here just because I wrote a blog post a couple of years ago, but I don't think I ever touched on this in the podcast. Although I touch on it in books, I think it might be worth expanding on here. And when I mentioned talked about the question 6 earlier about who do you live with and one of my reasons for moving to where I moved to, a lot of it came down to this feeling. And when I think of loneliness and alone, I talked about this with Trish on a recent podcast as well, that there's certain emotions that you're going to be very familiar with, and certain people are going to be way familiar with certain emotions than others. So for example, both me and Trish talked on this one. Loneliness is an emotion we're both very familiar with for different reasons. Trish is very extroverted. I'm much more of a social introvert. I love being around people, but I recharge when I'm by myself. And that loneliness feeling for me is always feedback on, does something in my life need to change, or something in my life off? Now, it depends on the duration of the feeling. So when it comes to loneliness, when it comes to feeling alone, over the short term, that's just a normal human emotion. There's certain human emotions that you're just going to feel. Anger, you know, if you're lucky, you're going to feel love. You know, the loneliness, isolation, like their happiness, sadness, all of these are normal human emotions. So feeling them over the short term isn't necessarily a bad thing. That's just the way life is. It's going to ebb and flow. But long-term and chronic loneliness, where you feel isolated, where you feel unsettled, where you feel off, for me, that's normally a sign that my ladder is up against the wrong wall. And I spoke in both books, particularly in the first book, The Fitness Mindset, about when I was working full-time as a teacher in London. And I touched on this earlier about when I was living in London. So it was a combination of two things for me. At the time, when I was working full-time as a primary school teacher in London, so 2012, 2013, when I was working full-time as a primary school teacher, I wasn't happy in my job, I didn't love what I was doing, and I didn't love where I was. And at the time, although I had really good friends around me, there was nobody that I felt especially close to, nobody that I felt like I could turn to and tell them how I was feeling. A part of it was down to not that they didn't set up that environment. It was down to my own insecurity and not wanting to tell them, I can see on reflection. But I was really unsettled at that time and I felt so lonely. And I used the example of London earlier, that it's such a dichotomy that there's fucking 12 million people and I was the loneliest I ever felt in my life. And ironically, where I am now, there's 200 people in my village and it's the least lonely I've ever felt, because I'm around family, I'm around friends, I have an incredible inner circle of people around me. And that's feedback that my ladder is up against the right wall. This is where I'm supposed to be. And always give yourself permission to change your mind. Just because it's where you're supposed to be right now, that might not be the case in 5 years, but you can check in with that. So when I was living in London, I fucking hated my job. I hated my first teaching job. You know, I've talked on this in earlier podcast episodes, in the very early series, probably the first couple of hundred episodes. And I talked about in The Fitness Mindset that I hated my first teaching job. And although I grew to enjoy it a little bit more and became a little bit more competent with it over time, particularly my last school, I loved my last school. My kids were awesome. The other teachers in the school were fantastic. I loved it. But it was the job. I was very much aware there was, for me, there was a different calling. And when I thought of my job, it made me feel really hollow. I'm like, this isn't what I'm supposed to do. I'm like, there's more that I can offer than this. I didn't know what it was at the time. I just remember having this massive unsettled feeling. And as a result, it made me feel really alone. I'm like, I feel like I'm by myself in this. And when I moved back to Ireland in 2014, and I've told this story before about like moving back in at my mum and dad, my sister Karen gave me her fucking little shitty Toyota Yaris that was as old as me, like one of those cars that I didn't know where to start in the morning. Like I used to have to leave an hour early for the gym anytime I had a client in case the car didn't work and I need to get a lift into the gym. And that was my life at the time. But I remember I felt like my ladder was up against the right wall. It was at the bottom. I was right at the bottom. I had no money. I had no social media. Nobody knew who I was. But my ladder was against the right wall and I knew it. I'm like, even though I'm at the bottom And from the outside looking in, it looks like I'm doing fucking terribly. But I'm like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm like, this is where I'm supposed to be. And as a result, I was able to climb that ladder quite quickly because I knew it was up against the right wall. I think that's why that analogy is so powerful. And very similar to when I was living in Galway City and then when I moved out closer to home. When I was living in Galway City, I'm like, I just feel like my ladder's up against the wrong wall. I'm like, this isn't where I'm supposed to be. And still, I didn't know the answer. I was like, you know, I'm going to experiment with moving out closer to home for 6 months and see if it works. And after 2-3 months, I'm like, okay, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be. And that's ladder up against the right wall. So what I would consider, if you're feeling that chronic loneliness or you're feeling that chronic feeling of just being alone, start asking yourself questions. One being, is your ladder up against the right wall in whatever it is that you're doing? That can be a relationship, that could be a job, that can be your physical location, your geography, where you are. There's a whole multitude. One of the reasons that I talk about the quadrants, health, wealth, love, and fulfillment, and rewire your mindset in the book and in the course, that it's so important to get clear. And what are your goals in your health? What are your goals in your wealth, your finances? What are your goals in your love, your family relationships, romantic relationships? What's your goal in your fulfillment levels, your job, what you do, you know, whatever it is that makes you feel like you're achieving? It's very important to get clear on those things, because once you do, you can start lining up your ladder against the right wall. And when you're feeling everything that you should, in the sense that you feel fulfilled, you feel happy, you feel joy, you feel all these other emotions, those feelings of aloneness or those feelings of loneliness tend to massively reduce. And I got asked this question recently on, after, it was off the back of the podcast with Trish, and somebody's like, do you ever feel lonely anymore? And I had to think about it. And I'm like, no. I'm like, that's a question that I'm, or an emotion I'm very familiar with, because I felt it for large portions of my 20s. But it's not something I've felt now. You get the acute feeling, you know, the short term, but that's just normal. That's how life is. But the chronic feeling, fuck, I haven't had it in 2 years, 3 years, maybe a bit longer. And as a result of that, I'm like, cool, it's feedback that you need to keep doing what you're doing. And regardless of where you're at, there's feedback in there somewhere, either that you need to continue on the path or the journey that you're on, or you need to change up. Either way, it's going to be down to what actions you want to take. If you want to keep doing what you're doing, you keep getting what you got. And that can be really beneficial if you're happy with what you're getting. But if you're not, it's probably time to make a change somewhere. Okay, question 9, last one. I love the question you ask on the podcast, but I'm going to ask you now. What are you most excited about right now? So this is one of my favorite questions myself that I ask guests as well, because you can tell a lot by where someone's head's at, by what they're excited about right now. I have a few things. So probably when it comes to the podcast and everything along those lines, there's two things I'm very excited about right now. One is the new book, obviously, which will be a mindset book around nutrition. So think of the fitness mindset, but think of the nutrition element of that. I've got the first draft of that complete, and come November, I'm going to be working on the second draft. So hopefully it'll be out. The plan as of now is September 2021. So I'm really excited about that. But the other thing I am excited about, and this is very much when life gives you lemons, make lemonade. When I found out my Rewire Your Mindset seminar was cancelled in Cork, I was fucking gutted. Like, I love my Rewire Your Mindset seminar. It's one of my favorite things that I do. On top of the podcast, I absolutely love it because you're feeding off the energy in the room. There's a couple of hundred people who are all of the same mindset trying to improve, and you're just feeding off that. So on top of, I always get a huge lift after that seminar, and then meeting people and people who are listening to the podcast, who have read the books, and hearing stories and just getting that interaction with people, I love it. So when the Clayton came back and said, look, we can't do it, government guidelines, restrictions, we're not able to do this, I was fucking gutted. I was like, oh, like, because I was like holding off positive outlook. I'm like, yeah, it'll be fine. I was like, by the time October comes, we'll be fine. So I asked the question. I'm like, okay, life gives you lemons. How do we make this into lemonade? So one of the things that I've done is that I'm really excited about now is the new Rewire Your Mindset course, which I'm excited about getting out there, but it's not the thing that I'm the most excited about. That seminar was always going to move into a course structure after this Cork seminar, just because of time commitments, other things that I have. So it goes through everything that was in the seminar. So it was an A to Z guide. So if you've read the book, Rewire Your Mindset, think of that times 100. It's just a step-by-step course that goes through everything in detail. But one of the bonuses that I've added for the people who signed up to that course, because a lot of people who were attending that seminar went straight into the course and used that as an option and signed up for the course. And what I'm doing as a bonus is 6 weeks in a Facebook group where I'm going to be interacting with people. So doing different Facebook lives, doing different Q&As, a weekly Q&A, so I can kind of get to know people better. And I'm really excited about that, partly because the part of the seminar that I love the most was the interaction with people. And I was really gutted when that element was pulled. I'm like, fuck, well, how can I mimic that? I'm like, what's the next best thing? So my thoughts were put everybody into a Facebook group and do lives, do Q&As and get to know people that way. So as of now, that's definitely the thing I'm most excited about. That Rewire Your Mindset course, again, everything I've talked about in today's podcast, I'll link in the show notes, you can check it out. But that's definitely the thing I'm most excited about, purely because that's what feeds me. It's kind of a selfish thing because like I get so much drive when people are trying to improve. And somebody asked me this on a podcast. I can't remember, was it Kevin Bioga? Or was it Charlie Johnson? Somebody asked me this on a podcast. I put it up on mine as a bonus that they're like, what motivates you? What drives you? And what drives me and motivates me is when I'm hearing other people who are trying to improve and hearing other people's stories about how they're applying things they've heard from the podcast or from the books or hopefully in this case from the course. That drives me because you're feeding off that energy. That's why the seminar, being in the room with, you know, it started at 100 people. The last one was just under 200 people. You're feeding off that energy in the room. And now I'm going to try and get that in a virtual style because it fuels me and lights me up. And as a result of that, it makes me feel really excited. Even now as I'm thinking about it, I can't wait. I'm really excited for that. It starts on the 19th. We're putting this podcast out on the 12th, starting next Monday on the 19th, that Facebook group. And yeah, so for everyone that signed up before the 19th, you'll have access to that. So I'm fucking super excited for that. So yeah, outside of that then, a few things in my personal life that are going really good. As I said, I've had some amazing people come into my life recently. A podcast I'm going to be recording soon will be another mindset episode about moments. One of the things me and Paul talk about, or Paul and I talk about a lot, is like the power of moments, how certain moments in your life can completely shift the direction on where things are going. And that can be meeting somebody, that can be a job, that can be putting yourself in a position for good things to happen, i.e. luck, being preparation, meeting opportunity. So I'm going to be recording a solo mindset podcast in the coming months on that. So I'm super excited with that area as well. But yeah, the book, the Rewire Your Mindset course in the Facebook group, and a couple of things going on in my personal life. So life gives you lemons. There's a pandemic. Races aren't going ahead. All these are the things that would normally make me feel excited. But you got to move in the direction with the way things are going. So yeah, love that question. Thank you for asking me. That's the answer. And I will continue to ask that one of future guests because it's one of my favorite questions that I ask at the end of most podcasts. So there we go. That is another Q&A episode. Hopefully you enjoyed it. There's a lot more of these episodes in earlier podcasts. The last one being in February, as I said, solo Q&A 265, episode 265, which talked about body fat tracking, no carbs post-workout, my average day, personal growth books, and living below your means. So definitely go check that out. If you enjoyed the format of today's podcast, give that next one a listen and scroll back through earlier episodes. One of the things we're eventually going to be building into the website on briankeenfitness.com is a search element for the podcast where you can literally just search binge eating or search fat loss or search vitamin D or search personal training or search money or search favorite books, and it will bring up those podcast episodes. Right now you can do it through Google. It's just not as efficient, but we will be building that into the website on briankeenfitness.com in the coming months. So hopefully that'll be really helpful just as we continue to move upwards of 300 plus episodes on the podcast. So for those of you who are long-term listeners, thank you for joining me all the way through in this awesome journey. And we will continue to keep it coming going forward. So everything I talked about in today's episode, the podcast, the online business podcast, the business course, the Rewire Your Mindset course, the BKF Online program, the books, everything that we talked about will be in the show notes. Click in through the description wherever you listen to on iTunes, Android users, this podcast, wherever you listen to it. I'm not sure what it is on Android. Stitcher. I'm an iTunes guy. I'm an Apple guy. And Spotify. So just click in the description or head over to briankeenfitness.com. Check out the show notes. Everything is in there. That's everything from today's episode. Catch you all next week. So there you have it. That's everything from today's episode. Hopefully you enjoyed it. As always, hit that subscribe or follow button if it's your first time listening. And if you're a long time listener, please give the show a rating or review. That massively helps with the algorithms and gets the podcast out to more people, which allows me to bring on expert guests and talk all things health, wellness, and fitness. Also, a massive thank you to today's sponsor, Thrive. So if you're looking to get your gut health check, be sure to check out the link in the description for today's episode. I'll catch you all next Monday.